Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the managing director of Atom Ventures and Atom CTO. And today I'm here with Alexander McDonald and Callum Skinner from Hindsight. Say hello, guys.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, everybody.
Sorry to interrupt there, but so we're going to talk about Hindsight, which is the new product, and you can obviously describe that. What I find quite interesting about all of this is, obviously, Alex, I've known you for a while. It's seen you go through this startup phase. So really what I want to touch on are, you know, it was your story, your entrepreneur story, how you came up with the idea, how it was to design a product, how you managed to get Callum on board. And then Callum, obviously, you're an Olympian, got a great amount of experience in the world of athletics and sport, and how you've managed to see what Alex has been doing and find a way to promote that through your network and connection. So now we've teased everybody enough. Alex, do you want to start talking about your journey and how you came up with Hindsight?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Hindsight started as a concept when I was living and working in London. I would commute more or less every day to work by bike, and then I'd spend a lot of time traveling to clients as well. So a lot of time in pretty heavy London traffic. And I frankly got sick and tired of cars overly aggressively overtaking me. The law states that you're supposed to give a cyclist as much space as you give a car, which almost nobody ever does. It's getting better now than it was when I first started, but it's definitely noticeable, the fact that a lot of people come incredibly close. So I, rather than just mump and moan about it and just be annoyed at all the drivers, decided to be a bit more proactive, taking the view that if I was able to see what type of vehicle was likely to overtake me in the next, you know, the next few car lengths, I could make a more accurate understanding of my surroundings. So for example, there are there's some types of vehicles which are typically more aggressive than others, and I'll leave that to everybody's imagination as to whether they fall into the aggressive or they think they've given everyone enough space categories. But the ability to understand what type of vehicle was coming behind and likely to overtake would have allowed me to more accurately understand how safe I was on the road, how much space I was likely to be given when that vehicle came by, and what steps I could take to try and mitigate any potential pinch points, as we call them, when you get squished effectively by something on either side of you. It's quite a common occurrence for cyclists. So I looked at rear vision solutions available to cyclists and tried out a bunch of them and found nothing particularly good enough to solve the problem. I spoke to my friends, many of whom were cyclists, to find if they'd tried something, and almost all of them had something which had been bought, used twice, and then left in the bottom of a dusty drawer for 6 years. So clearly there was a desire for a solution to this problem, but nothing was really fitting the bill. So it was at that time that I started working on the first Hindsight's prototype, as it stands, or the first concept for it anyway. I wanted a solution which, something that fit into a cyclist's lifestyle fundamentally. It's easy enough to build something that you glue onto handlebars or onto your helmet, but something that actually worked with what cyclists did on their day-to-day basis, something that wasn't garish or awkward or difficult to set up or just looked really, really awful, was kind of the goal. And I realized that the one thing that pretty much everybody goes cycling with is sunglasses. So we spent some time trying to work out what we could do to integrate rear vision into sunglasses, and that's how we ended up with our now patented Hindsight lens technology, which has a built-in angle of deflection and an internal mirror coating, allowing users to see more with a slight twist of the head than they could using any other current rear vision methodology. So in the early stages, when we just had a 3D render of what we thought our first pair of glasses might one day look like, which is now consigned to the dustbins of history, I reached out to Callum on Facebook, because I thought, hang on, I've just had this cycling idea, and I know a guy who's known for cycling, so maybe I should get in touch with him. And I did. So we just had a Skype call. At this point I was living in my friend's grandparents' house for free because I'd just been made redundant and had absolutely no money. And we had this Skype call with Calum, and he said he thought it was an interesting idea and he'd like to be involved. And that's when we started taking it a bit more seriously. And that's when I kind of devoted myself basically full time to working on the project. And since then, yeah, it's been a lot of behind the doors R&D, and then everything in the last kind of 14 months has really just exploded.
So Callum, you've gone from Olympian to entrepreneur. So, you know, what did you first think when you saw the product, and what made you decide to get involved in this from a business perspective?
I guess I could see the need for a product like this, similarly to Alex. You know, the whole time that I was a professional cyclist, of course, one of the targets is to win medals, but the knock-on effect off the back of that is to get more people on bikes. Now, the biggest barrier to getting more people on bikes is that people fear for their own safety. And you could argue that infrastructure is lagging behind, speed limits are too high, pollution, all that kind of stuff. But Alex just came to me with a really beautifully kind of simple solution, which is that if we can give the rider more information, i.e. they can see what's happening behind them, then we've got a really compelling product. And I like the simplicity of it. I think Alex and I complement each other quite well. He's definitely got the science covered. I've got the gift of the gab end of the spectrum. So I kind of describe it really simply. It's basically just a pair of sunglasses that extend your periphery to everything that's going on behind you. It's such a simple product, and to have the patent in place now just puts us in a really good position to motor ahead with a whole bunch of other use cases as well. But now, me and Alex knew each other from school, and I guess he went off to university to study science, and I went off to win the Olympics, and it's been quite a nice kind of coming together off the back of that.
So I think what you're meant to say is you've got the looks and he's got the brains, right? That's
So, well, when he gets his lockdown haircut sorted.
So I want to talk about the transition of the product. But before I do, Cam, you touched on other use cases, right? So how do you, I think everyone can see an obvious use for this on the road. But from a sports perspective, what other use cases did you see there for Hindsight? And then how did that impact your design process? Because I remember seeing one of the first prototypes, and what you've got now is very different, I think, isn't it, from what was there early on. So how do all these kind of different use cases or features play into that design process? And what did you see when you first saw that?
It's one of the exciting things when we talk about Hindsight is that everyone comes up with a little use case. And some we've heard before and some are totally new. So Alex has had correspondence with wheelchair users who don't have very good neck mobility, who are using the wheelchair in the streets, who want to see what's going on around them. We've had comments about people who work in rail yards might not always know if a train's coming up behind them. The military, you know, there's kind of endless applications. Specifically in the sport world, you think of sports like rowing, where you're perpetually heading towards something backwards. It has a natural fit there too. So that's one of the really exciting things about being involved in this project, is that the use cases are coming thick and fast, and it makes us realize that there's significant value in this IP beyond cycling.
So when you talk about software design, right, use cases obviously are 100% necessary in order for you to understand what you need to build. But then it's not so difficult to try it from a software perspective. It's not always that difficult to adapt a piece of software for different people. But from a product perspective, I can imagine it must be very difficult, because you're not only thinking about the use cases of how people are going to wear it and use it, but then you're thinking about body shapes, body types, you know, eyesight and that kind of stuff. So can you just walk us through that process? Where do you start when you're designing a product?
Well, we were quite fortunate that we started quite early on working with Robert Henderson, who's our optical systems engineer. So he is, he's actually won Scottish Edge himself on a different project in 2008. So he's won it twice now, which is just very unfair. And he is also in 2008, he was a European Inventor of the Year. So he's a world-class optical systems engineer. By that, I mean, he has a very acute understanding of the human eye, how it works, the biomechanics of it. And he's able to work with the mathematical models required to determine what we can do to build a system in virtual space that will work in reality. So our models are based on some kind of standard interpupillary distances and some standard eye rotation ranges in terms of how comfortable people can move their eyes from left to right, and in terms of like neck mobility and neck movement as well. So we used that as our baseline. Way, way back in the day, back when Hindsight was just a concept, we built a JavaScript tool, which was based on some more, much, much more gross level data. Basically, it was just some Google and then some strings of code. And it built this little 2D top-down model of a head that you could turn, and it would show you the field of view that everybody could see. It looked very, it worked well enough to, you know, demonstrate the concept to people. But we took that and we gave it to Bob, and Bob said, right, okay, I can take this and make it as good quality as, you know, the gold standard of optics. So he took us, took our technology very much to the next level on that front, because we had a concept and he took us to the point where we had something where we could legitimately argue this is going to work in real life. And when it comes to the different use cases and applications, we're kind of doing the opposite at the moment to the way you suggested people progress. We were just getting started with our technology. This is our version one out in the market, and it's already producing these new use cases for people. What we're going to do is have conversations with people. We're going to see what feedback we get, because fundamentally, I don't operate. I built this technology to cater to cyclists. That's what it's designed to do. I don't operate in the wheelhouse of all these different sectors. I don't look at the guys who work in the train yards. I don't have experience in the PPE. I don't have experience in wheelchairs or in rowing. So what we're going to do is speak to these people, the people who've decided that they've seen recognized value in the hindsight technology, and we're going to see what they want, because they know what they need more than we possibly could. So we're quite confident in the ability of our existing technology and our existing model to apply across different disciplines and different areas and different use cases already, because it's designed pretty simply, which is that if your average person puts it on, it will allow you to see behind you with a slight 5 to 10 degree turn of the head and a glance to the left or right. That said, if there is opportunity for us to further iterate and make new changes because there's a particular requirement that a particular use case has, that's something that we are quite capable of iterating on quite quickly now. The hardest part really was the manufacturing scale of our lens technology, so-called the impossible lens, because we went to 11 different lens manufacturers who all told us we were absolutely crazy people for trying to develop it, until we finally found someone who was able to deliver it. So now that we've got that lens technology and going to Kickstarter and, you know, proving the use case and proving the market demand there helped us fund that piece of the project, we are able to more easily take the technology and apply it to new areas.
So that's, you raised an interesting point there. So obviously when 10 people say to you, you can't do it, and you keep going to them, what keeps you going? What keeps you actually, like, did you have a feeling that they were just fobbing you off, or was it something that you realized, no, we can do it, we just need to find the right person?
Like Calum said, whilst he was off winning medals and in nice hot countries, I was sitting in Glasgow in a 6-foot-thick concrete bunker working on lasers as a physicist. And having seen some of the most complicated systems that human beings have ever created, I thought that making an angled lens was far from out with the scope of things that humans can create. If you can put man on the moon using less calculation power than is found in a good old-fashioned pocket calculator, then building an angled lens is not impossible. So I just kept hunting until we found somebody who was, found some manufacturing partners who were similarly open to trying new things.
So what were the other challenges you faced? I mean, one of the key things is materials, right? So I see you guys have chosen hemp as one of your materials. There was a specific reason for that. I guess, Callum, given that you probably see a lot of technology like this in sports, there with a lot of different types of materials, was there something that you've seen out there that could be used?
Yeah, I think from a market perspective, one of our biggest challenges is that there's a pretty big player in the cycling market that has a significant amount of market share called Oakley. And basically making a product that's compelling enough to, and also kind of fashionable enough as well, to move your established Oakley user away from a standard pair of sports sunglasses to something that's far safer, far more functional, and, you know, far better looking, I think, in a lot of aspects, is quite a challenge from my perspective. And I think that's where Alex Lee kind of, well, together we leverage my cycling contacts to try and keep our finger on the pulse in that regard. But it's certainly a major challenge taking on such an established player. But implementing materials like hemp and things like that just gives another kind of compelling reason for, yeah, you know, more of your kind of commuter cyclists or like urban user to be able to move to not only a pair of glasses for all the aforementioned features, but something that's also better for the environment as well. You know, the glasses market is typically reliant on plastics, and there's a lot of people who want to move away from that.
So you mentioned previously that you're working with the Hut Group as well. So I guess you're doing a fair amount on branding. So from perspective, either you are free to answer this, what is a hindsight brand? What does it mean to you? What should it mean to people who are buying the glasses?
Oh, well, that's a big one. We've been doing a lot of studying on what it is we want our brand to represent recently. Fundamentally, what we view hindsight is We came up with Hindsight originally as a cycling focused brand, given that was our modus operandi and the reason for the impetus for the invention. But since the Kickstarter opened up all of these new use cases to us, which we hadn't really been able to consider because we weren't in these situations before, we've kind of had to have a little think about the restructure of the Hindsight brand. And now we think we're more about optimizing human performance than anything else, because fundamentally our technology gives people eyes in the back of their head, right? That's basically what we do. And that has application in lots of different areas. And as a brand, that has lots of potential implications for places we can take the brand. If you're to take it within cycling purely, then things we are looking at and things that we're actively engaging in is study to determine exactly how much more efficient we are able to make cyclists. How much better are you at identifying hazards? How much better are you at threat detection? How much of an impact does that have on your stopping distance? How much can that in turn affect your ability to avoid a crash? Things like this are our current focus of study for cycling. And within that remit, the field of, you know, optimizing human performance very much fits. And in terms of the other use cases, in terms of new areas that we're looking to apply the technology, if you're able to just take one of the use cases, let's say rowing as an example, we had a sculler come to us who say, you know, I've been spending my entire adult life crashing my boat because I don't know where I'm going. That's not a hugely efficient way to, you know, spend your life. And our technology fundamentally has application in that space. All of a sudden, you know, with a quick turn of the head, you can know exactly where it is you're going. And then taking it to the more extreme, we've had people come to us saying, you know, we want to use your glasses in private security or potential military applications for making sure that people are able to more effectively protect their, you know, their target by having a more thorough understanding of the world around them. Same goes for some people we've spoken to about, you know, police applications, this kind of stuff. There's lots of applications we have, and fundamentally the brand can, whilst we're just at the point now of beginning to incept all of these new fields, the brand fundamentally is dedicated towards optimizing human performance above everything else, regardless of the field that we currently operate in.
So one question that kind of arises, because there are so many use cases and the fact that you mentioned obviously Oakley is there within the market, how come this hasn't come to market before? Or have there been other iterations of this, but they've just not worked?
But there's been attempts at solving this problem, but the I'm sure Callum could talk a little bit about the current format that the eyewear brand is within cycling. But in terms of rear vision solutions, there have been previous attempts, and none of them have been particularly successful or particularly effective. The reason we think we're doing particularly well right now is because our technology solves the problem better than the competition fundamentally does. We've got helmet, elbow, wrist, handlebar mounted mirrors all available to people, and they just don't work very well. I know because I tried all of them, and I know because I know I've got a lot of friends who've tried them and haven't used them, and I also know because I've got people who tried Hindsight glasses, and then when we had the earliest stage prototype, we had people try them out and then not want to give them back to us because they found the utility so great that they were, you know, they described it as being like getting used to having a seatbelt. Right. So I lived in North Africa for a while where there is no requirement for seatbelts, and a lot of the taxis straight up don't have them. So if you're used to operating with a seatbelt from the UK where I'm from, and then you go to a place where you don't have seatbelts, you frankly feel uneasy going down the road without one. And we had people saying they had a similar experience with the Hindsight tech. Once they got used to it, it became such a part of their integrated cycling experience that they wouldn't feel particularly comfortable, you know, operating without it.
So what I want to move on to next before we talk about the future of Hindsight is a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey. So what are the biggest challenges, obviously apart from manufacturing, but what have been the biggest challenges you've faced so far? And I guess, Callum, for you, you've made the switch from sports to business. Has there been kind of an additional hurdles that you faced or some kind of additional challenges?
Yeah, no, if I go first, I think I've always had a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit in me. And I think if you're a young athlete looking to get sponsorship, you have to. You know, you're sending out proposals, you're trying to build connections, you're trying to get companies to give you money to pedal faster in a circle. It's not an easy sell. And so I think that's always been in me in a little bit. And I've really enjoyed this, the journey we've been on with hindsight so far. In terms of the crossover between sport and business, it's a lot closer than you think. I've done a year's worth of business coaching with Morgan Stanley, and we look to kind of share a lot of the lessons from high performance sport and transfer that to the world of high performing business. And a lot of the crossover is very, very similar, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned. So although I turned down a place at uni to go and become a cyclist, I actually still feel quite well prepared from a kind of soft skill perspective in the business world, whether that's about resilience or taking feedback or targeting a goal with absolutely everything I've got. It's weird that you actually feel quite well prepared, and it feels like quite a similar environment. I've dabbled in sports politics and the not-for-profit world, and that feels totally alien compared to the commercial business world. So I feel like I've found quite a nice niche after sport, and hindsight's been a massive part of that development as well. So it's been an amazing journey so far.
I bet a few rugby players up in Scotland as well who've transitioned, and so there's been a big push from sports to business. How about yourself, Alex? How's the you started this fairly straight after university, right? You had some jobs, and then this is kind of the main thing that you've been doing since uni, isn't it?
Yeah, well, after uni, I went and took a sales and marketing job at an IT company because apparently having a STEM degree doesn't... The government's always going on about they want people in STEM, and what they don't say is we want people in STEM so that we can fund more people into defence companies. And that was basically the only place that was hiring somebody with a laser qualification. So I decided I didn't want to do that. I'd rather put my other skill sets to use. So I ended up running sales and marketing for an IT company, and then did that for about a year. And then after that went a bit sideways. Whilst I'd been working there, I came up with a concept for hindsight after, going to all these clients day in and day out. And I was made redundant, bottom line, at the end of the day from the job. And that's the point where I started, talking to Callum a bit more seriously about this. So we took hindsight at that point as a concept. It was something that was basically just me working on. Me and Callum was consulting a little bit every couple of weeks when I was saying, I've made these changes. What do you think? I made these changes. What do you think? And then we got my co-founder Ian involved from an operational standpoint. He's got a very broad and deep understanding of company operations, having worked in blue chip organizations, from Sky to Experian at very high levels. And he brought a lot of private sector rigor to our, what we were doing. Started making sure that we were actually delivering on our targets and establishing KPIs and making sure we were getting contracts and NDAs and all this kind of stuff put out. And from there, it just grew. It grew to the point where we got ready to pitch the Scottish Edge, which at that point we only had one prototype. And it was held together with super glue. And I was paranoid that as soon as the judges put it on, it was going to break, which it luckily didn't. It broke shortly after. But yeah, since then, it's been a pretty wild journey.
Yeah, because you kind of make it sound all so easy.
He's definitely sold himself short there. And I'm going to jump in because he's done a terrible job of selling his entrepreneurial skills there. Alex is a tenaciously competent serial inventor. And I think when you asked us earlier about what does the future of hindsight looks like, we can't talk about any of those projects as yet, but I know Alex is full of ideas and ready with kind of go-to-market propositions to try and build that brand out, and that's something that he does incredibly well. So Alex, I think we need to talk about how you speak about your entrepreneurial spirit a little bit more.
So let's talk about the Scottish Edge, and you've received a number of awards over the last year or two, right? So can you talk about what your achievements have been so far, how those awards came about,
what you've won? So the first thing we won was the Scottish Edge Awards, which was the big Dragon's Den-esque pitch.
Yeah, just give people a little bit of a flavour of what that is for the non-Scottish listeners.
Sure, yeah. So it's actually, despite being a Scotland-focused grant, it's actually UK's biggest innovation prize. And it's effectively a Dragon's Den-esque pitch where you go up and pitch in front of five seasoned business people, in front of a live audience as well, for the chance of winning some amount of money. So it's anything up to £100,000. And then they will, depending on how many winners they select, they will give you either the amount you asked for or some proportion of the amount you asked for. So we went in there and pitched, and we ended up winning £50,000, which ended up helping, allowing us to launch our Kickstarter campaign. So we took that initial capital and we put it to work in the marketing around the Kickstarter. And we took that initial kind of push and then we launched the Kickstarter, despite everybody's advice to hold off, in the middle of kind of peak COVID time. It was June, July of 2020, when nobody wanted to talk about anything that wasn't coronavirus. And despite that, we still managed to raise just over £100,000 in our opening month of international sales, and that ended up shipping all the way out to 38 countries.
Well, so I guess you hit the sorry to interrupt, but I guess you hit kind of the right moment, really, because everyone started cycling as soon as COVID hit.
Yeah, I mean, it really, there was a big boom. I think April 2020 was the biggest single increase in cycling sales for decades, certainly UK bike sales. But yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a mixed bag for us. There was obviously a lot of serious impact from the pandemic on our business operations. Luckily, not as serious as many bigger players would have felt the squeeze. But we did have a lot of issues with getting all of the raw materials, for example, together. But the growth of cycling during the pandemic, we are pretty confident it's not going anywhere. I mean, people turn to cycling for a release, for exercise, to try and get outside and stop looking into the Zoom call webcam all day, every day. And I know we at Hindsight certainly welcomed it. I mean, I've been a big proponent of cycling for years, certainly evangelically to all of my friends. They used to joke that wherever I went was accompanied by a bicycle. And the reason that's the case is because it's just great. If you're going less than 5 miles, coming from Scotland, the country as wet as here, I can guarantee you if you're going less than 5 miles, you probably don't need a car. You'd be fine with a bike.
So apart from Scottish Edge, what else have you won? What other achievements do you have?
So we won the Royal Academy of Engineering Fellowship, which was quite an interesting one. That came with a course, which is by St. John's Innovation Centre. And that is basically like a mini MBA. So it's been quite a learning experience. We actually applied for a series of grants in November, expecting to not win any of them, and we won three of them. Basically all of the ones we applied for. So there was the Royal Academy of Engineering, there's the Scottish Unlocking Ambition Programme, and there was the ALIA Impact Accelerator based down in London. So between December and March, I was doing the equivalent of three mini MBAs at once, which, whilst trying to run a company, it was no mean task. But yeah, it was great. I mean, the learning opportunities we had there were fantastic. We learned a lot and met a lot of fantastic people through the process. And it's great as well, because so many of them put you in a room with other entrepreneurs, with other successful people, with other people just starting out. And it's great to just speak to people who have gone through the similar trials and tribulations that you have, people who are suffering the same problems because of Brexit and coronavirus, people who know what grant applications are worth going for and which ones aren't, and people who've, you know, been through the ringer, people who are either, it's amazing how companies which are either a couple of months either way can have so much to talk about. But those are our main accolades. I mean, they're pretty proud about all of them, to be honest.
So you also have a website up and running now, and I've seen that one of the stars is sold out. So can you talk a little bit about that? How do people find you? What are the difference between each of the models that you've got on sale? When's the next wave coming through?
Yeah, sure. So we have three units available just now. We've got the Edge Sport, which is our plastic pair. It's our most popular pair. It's made out of TR90, and that's TR90 frames and polycarbonate lenses, designed to be as lightweight as humanly possible so that they don't get way down on you on long rides. And the glasses currently come in at about 29 grams, so they're so light that you almost don't feel them, which is a pretty rare thing in the sunglasses field. And then we have two hemp models, one which is made out of a pure hemp material, which is very strong and very clean in terms of its manufacture process. The only byproduct of producing it is water. So it's stupidly clean and good for the environment. And then we have another version, which is the hemp core, which is the hemp material with an outer plastic shell for the people who want to have the, you know, the sustainability of the hemp option with something that's a bit more classic looking.
So, and everything's handmade in Scotland, right?
The hemp ones are all handmade in Scotland. Yes, right. The plastic ones are made down south in England, and then they're all aggregated in the UK.
Okay, I was going to actually ask you, how does it feel to be a Scottish company? Is it something particularly different? Let's say, I don't know. I guess it's hard to compare given you've not started an English company, right? But so, I mean, how proud are you guys to be a Scottish business?
I think it means quite a lot. I think you know, Alex has lived in London. I've been in England since I was 17, and I guess maybe it crosses over into sport a little bit. I think the Scots are known for being kind of fiercely patriotic, and they're happy to get behind ideas that are kind of born and made and developed in your country. So I don't want to second guess what it would be like to launch a startup in England, but it definitely feels, I don't know, like a kind of little community, Alex, or something like that. Like people are invested in seeing a Scottish success story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a really strong support network up here as well. Like from what I've heard, the people who have started companies or been involved with companies in Scotland versus out with Scotland, they say here is one of the best, most resourceful places for starting a company. Plus, I think the fact that Scotland has such a rich cycling history as well is obviously a boon to us. There's all manner of little tidbits of cycling history that will find their way back to Scotland in some way. So it's nice to be some small part of that now.
I can definitely echo that, having set up a business in Scotland, as you know. The community up there is fantastic, right? I think the fact that, as you said, everyone's very open, there's a community feel, but everyone likes sharing. And I think that's the key. I think that's the only way that businesses can survive in the long run. Right? So I know that you can't talk about all of your plans for world domination, but what are your next steps? What can people expect from Hindsight over the coming months?
Sure. I mean, we're busy working away on quite a lot of projects at the moment just now. I mean, we're taking feedback from our flagship model. So we're now out there. You know, we've got close to 1,000 pairs that have been shipped out to people, and we're really interested to hear what it is that they think about our technology and what they think we can do to improve. Because obviously we've designed our glasses based on what we think people want and based on what the people we've spoken to. You know, we did a reasonable amount of beta testing and trialing, but fundamentally most of these will have been people who we knew, and therefore you know, not quite as fruitful feedback as we'll get from the raw market. So we're interested just to hear what it is that people are saying. We're getting some constructive feedback, which is great, and we're going to be looking to implement some changes to the glasses and make a new harder, better, faster, stronger version. And beyond that, we're looking at developing some additional technology, which is super duper secret at the moment, but which hopefully will be public knowledge in not too long. And yeah, beyond that, we're looking at just broadening and deepening our market application. So finding out new areas we can use the tech, expanding the tech's applications, and basically trying to get more cyclists interested in our tech as well. We're in that crucial market education phase where we're teaching people why it's important to have rear vision. And we're interested to see, you know, how that message resonates and to see how it trickles down into the kind of cycling zeitgeist.
I have quite a few listeners in the US, so will you be making any plans? Can you buy the glasses out in the US?
Yes, you absolutely can. We're internationally selling right now. So www.hindsight.store or Google Hindsight Glasses, and we'll take you to our webpage where you can see myself and Callum, unfortunately, in one case. But yeah, we ship more or less internationally at the moment. So yeah, it's ready whenever they are.
And so final question then, really, is how do people get in touch with you? How do, if they like what they've heard, how do they get in touch? How do they try and get on board?
Yeah, so our website has a contact email address, which is contact@hindsight.store, which will get in contact with us. There's plenty of resources as well on our website. And at the moment as well, we're actually raising capital to kind of expand out and push further. So if anybody has any particular interest in that as well, then they can track me down on LinkedIn. I'm Alexander McDonald. I'm sure you can find Callum on Twitter as well, and feel free to harass him to ask for contact details about our current raise. But that's currently our focus, as much as I would like to be doing the day-to-day stuff in the business today. Right now, my entire workload is focused on raising capital to drive that next generation of hindsight technology.
Perfect. Well, thanks for that, guys. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and best of luck with the raise.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Byraf.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like what you hear, then please subscribe with the Atom Ventures podcast, and you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the great podcasting sites. Please also leave a review, and if you want to get in contact, then please visit our site, atomcto.com. You can find us on LinkedIn under Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, and you can email us at info@atomcto.com.